Blog Talk Radio.
Stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you have done.
Good evening. Welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now Blog Talk Radio Show, brought to you by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Tammy Shufstall. I'm calling in from Pompano Beach, Florida, and I'll be your host tonight. I'm also a survivor of child abuse. Tonight's show is an open mic forum, question and answer. If you'd like to join the show, we definitely need some participation. The number is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. Before we get started, let me tell you a little bit about NASCA. The National Association for Adult Survivors of Child Abuse is a nonprofit 501c3 organization, and we're self-supporting through our own contributions. If you'd like to donate to NASCA, we would certainly appreciate it, and it is tax deductible. Here at NASCA, we have a single purpose: to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent and physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so from two perspectives, especially getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse. And we present the facts to show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. We also offer hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone who is interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Again, if you'd like to call and participate, I definitely need some callers. 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. I see no one has called in. We did have someone scheduled to be a special guest tonight. Unfortunately, for whatever reason, she's not here. So it's just me. I will talk about the website just a little bit and see if some people call in. Our website is www.nasca.org. And if you go to our website, it's a very friendly site to go to. You've got programs. There's some bars in red. You've got the NASCA programs, and if you click on that, it tells you we've got global recovery groups, start a recovery group, calendar of events, talks about the radio show like tonight, the ambassador program, the mobile website, promotional tools, and highlights of this page. We'll move over to news and articles. We have a current newsletter. We have feature articles, news and special notes, news from the past. We have some statistics on child abuse, and we have some videos. The next tab is all about recovery. Click on that tab. We have self-help groups that have links, professional help, find a professional, local government help, book list, comments and letters, and we also have a link to our Facebook. If anybody's called in. We do have a caller here. Let me open that mic Area code 207, who do I have the pleasure of speaking with?
Hi, who's this? This is Kathy.
This is Tammy Shopstall.
Hi, Tammy. This is Kathy up in Maine. How are you?
I'm fine, Kathy. Thank you for calling in.
Well, I hear you're alone. I remember last month sometime, Bill had a show, and his caller was unable to connect. And he called. Mm-hmm. I called in, and he put me on hold, and I was all by myself. And I've certainly never taken your position for itself, but I did what you're doing, and go ahead and show all the wonderful opportunities NASCA has available for people to connect with, which is great, you know.
Okay.
Really helpful.
Well, absolutely, and I'll just go on that, and then we'll get into some discussions. Hopefully some other people will call in, but if not, I'm grateful that you called in, and we can discuss child abuse and some recovery.
Certainly.
Okay. We have a link here for protecting our kids, some prevention and intervention, federal resources, some nonprofits. We have a link for the missing because, you know, we know a lot of our children, you know, they go missing. Offenders,
oh, yeah.
Media outreach. We have about the founder and our forum. The last tab we have is volunteers for NASCA. If you'd like to participate in the volunteer program, we have that. We have some contact information. We have some of our primary volunteers because we are 100% volunteers. We have an ambassador program. We've got some links for young adults. We'd love to get young adults involved, veterans and cops, our 12 traditions, and the 12-step radio show. So those are some of the resources we have on the website. Kathy, you said you're calling in from Maine?
Yes, I am, and I just do want to add, which is said but not often enough on the air, is that, and I've only, it's been a couple of years since I've been listening and conversing with other NASCA members, and it really is nice to hear, and you're a family. We're a family. You know, it's very nice, and it's a comforting.
Absolutely.
It's a comforting feeling for, you know, those of us that haven't had as children that family connection growing up.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead, please.
No, I was just saying I was very blessed to have a wonderful marriage for 32 years, and my husband passed away earlier last year, almost a year now. And and it's sort of nice to have a family there, you know, to kind of check in with now and again. So it's nice because my family of origin, of course, but as for many incest victims, they don't want to hear it. You know, they don't want to be part of anybody that wants to speak out about the incest. So that was,
absolutely.
It's always nice to have others. And they all understand, most people that have been incest survivors understand how difficult it is for the other family members. So it's nice for the family atmosphere. In addition to all of the links that you and Bill and for years have worked so hard in, you know, assimilating on one page for everyone, I think it is the people that really make the difference, isn't it?
It is. You know, I was looking at the stats this afternoon, and we never know. We have, like now, we have another caller, and I want to welcome Annie in a few minutes. But I was looking at the stats this afternoon. We may just have one, two people. I was faced with being on my own before you called in, and I'm very grateful for you and Annie to call in. But I was looking at the stats, and we can't tell them until the next couple of days. But, you know, there was a day we had over 1,000 listeners.
Oh, that's
terrific.
We
can have 80 people.
That's
terrific.
Yeah,
I mean, we may have one or two people on the show.
Yeah,
but you know.
That's terrific. And hello, Annie.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's welcome Annie. But, yeah, we may have 300 people listening. And I look, it also gives us, it provides us with a tool where we can see where they're calling in from. We had one calling in from Germany. We had them calling in from the UK. We have a lot of people who call in. Anyone who is listening and you'd like to participate, tonight will be a great night. The number is 646-595-2118. And with that said, I want to welcome Annie. Annie, you're calling, and where are you calling from? 562, Erica 562. Welcome, by the way.
Hi, thank you. I'm calling from Long Beach, California.
Okay. Well, welcome to the NASCA show. For whatever reason, we had a guest speaker. She didn't, she was, for whatever reason, as of this point, she has not been able to call in. But we have three people here. We have a show. We know we have people listening from, like I just said, from all over the world, people who are calling in looking for some sort of support. So I know that Kathy just shared with us that she's an incest victim. Annie, I don't think I've had the pleasure, I don't believe, of meeting you. If you'd like to just tell us a little bit about yourself, just a little bit, that would be amazing.
Well, I'm a member of Kathy's Club. I am also an incest victim, and I do a lot of advocacy work for people who are victims.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, thank you for your work. I really appreciate that. So, again, I'm mm-hmm. Jamie Schaffstall. I'm calling in from Palm Beach, Pompano Beach, Florida. We've got Kathy calling in from Maine, and we have Annie calling in from California. Cool. Well, just to tell you a little bit about myself, you know, I grew up in Augusta, Georgia. My first abuser did not sexually abuse me. It was my grandmother. She was very mean, very cruel. She beat me. She put me down. She emotionally tortured me, made me feel less than. And then my mother remarried when I was about 7 or 8, somewhere around there. And then I had a stepfather who tried to molest me and tried to groom me. He was not able to. And so then he went on, moved on to another family member and molested her. But then, you know, then I was always the little liar, or I didn't count. And my nickname was Dummy, you know, growing up. So then, you know, I had abuse in other ways. So it doesn't matter. We don't measure each other's abuse. Abuse is abuse, and if you were just abused one time, that is traumatic. But the purpose of us here is to give a place for people to go, and we can discuss it. All of our stories are different, but we do have common themes. You know, I can't tell you how many times we've been on the show. Well, I can relate to that. You know, my story is a little bit different, but then we find common threads. A lot of people think that it only happens to them. You know, my own sibling said, you know, when I was in school, because I remember her, you know, at that time, even though we didn't talk about it as children, didn't really know that it had happened to each other. She was like, I remember walking in school and thinking, you know, why me? Nobody else has to deal with this. Not realizing now the stats, it happens to 1 in 3 girls and at least 1 in 5 boys that we know of, not to mention all the ones we don't know of. So it can, you know, it happens to a lot of us. A lot of us are in the boat. What do you guys think?
Well, I think it should be said that one of the big issues, as far as, yes, it happens to so many of us, especially as children, is that we don't even come forward. Now, I did a little earlier than average, but the average is so much later because we keep it in. So the numbers mm-hmm. of us walking around in silence, repressing, is astronomical. And once again, it's nice to have a place to share it. And it's also nice that people get it. They understand, as you were saying, the abuse is abuse. But the trauma is so similar, even though the steps and the traumatic events that got us there, that we all have to deal with, very similar ways of the way the trauma hit us, you know. I know for many people, they fell into drugs and addiction. I fortunately was able to avoid that particular thing, but I was running uh-huh. and staying away and was extremely promiscuous, uh-huh. but not taken over. I was always the aggressor, Barry. But then I got into the adult entertainment industry, which was also uh-huh. in hindsight, understanding how it was all, I wouldn't have, something tells me at this elderly age, I wouldn't have done that had I not been sexually abused as a child. It really sets your trajectory off. And like I said, and you were saying, whatever it is you go through, it doesn't escape you. You know,
it
just, you have to, it is, yeah. I heard another thing, and I think I would like to hear Annie's, anything else she'd like to say, but certainly her take on it. I read recently, and I don't remember which particular great author of the inside of this, who was speaking of sexual abuse survivors, and they said, the first cry is for help, and the second cry is for justice. And, you know, I thought that resonated with me, as we say, because, as I said, it was a long time, and then I, almost 50 years later, said, "Hey, pay up, bro. Yeah, this isn't good enough to say I'm sorry and forget about it, you know." But anyway, I just wanted to know, and it doesn't matter what the instance is. Well, it does, but in the instances on my particular journey into confronting the brother and stuff. But it does matter. I think it does matter. It's not closure ever, but it's a good part of the dealing with it, I guess, for lack of a better way of putting
process.
It. Dealing and healing. I mean, dealing. So I don't want to say closure, but you know, you don't closure. But it's certainly a step that I think I haven't been able to see justice. I got a little bit of compensation from Mama, who witnessed, but still, and it was something before she died, but still, so, you know, how many of us, you know, the woman too, I shouldn't say, because men are abused as well, never see the justice, never see the fellow or the perpetrator held to account, you know, being shamed and pointed, and people, I mean, how many big name people we've seen in the past 10 years fall from grace because of the proven allegations and credible allegations, and whatever they may have done before in their life is doesn't discount whatever they had done. And while it never takes away the pain, it is a bit of, I don't know, it's a bit of comfort for those of us that never got it. I'm happy for that.
Right.
It gives me comfort when I see others receive justice. And I'd like to know how both of you feel about it, Tammy and Annie. You rhyme.
Well, let's start with Annie.
Too. How cool.
Annie. Tammy and Annie. Okay, Annie, the mic is yours.
Okay, thanks. Well, so many ideas came up in that. I had to write down a few so I'd know what to talk about next. And the one about justice, that our first call out is for help and our second is for justice, I really like that. In my case, I did not seek justice, but I did seek revenge. And I know that's not politically acceptable, probably. But all I did, the only revenge I did was I wrote about it and I got even in my creative writing. That was my revenge. So in a way, that was justice.
He read it, and all the people around him read it, too. I mean, whatever you wrote was actually able to blanket the abuser's surroundings.
You mean, did they read it?
Yeah, did it make an effect on him or you know, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I wrote a poem,
too.
I don't know how many relatives got it, but he probably got it, you know, eventually. But, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
That's what I meant. Yeah, exactly. That's what I meant.
I didn't write it until after he died.
Okay.
So,
okay.
No,
that's okay. That's wonderful. You know, I just wanted to know.
And I found it so healing to write it, to get it all out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fiction, so I got to make up stuff and make it worse and make it better and put new people in there and play with the whole story.
I wonder. Oh, that sounds fun. I had envisioned things too in the order of revenge. Fortunately, I was never willing to carry them out. But golly, I'd love to write about those too. Interesting. I'm sorry to interrupt. You got a great story. Go ahead.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. We just got to make sure, you know, because we have to be cognizant of people who are listening, you know, they want to be able to follow us. So I appreciate that, and I'm bad about stepping on people as well, so I apologize ahead of time. So don't worry about it. We just got to remember the people who are listening. Perfectly fine. I do it all the time. You'll hear me say, oh, I'm so sorry. I think I did it to you earlier, Kathy. But, you know, the first is a cry to help. I think a lot of it is we need validation. I feel it is hard, and this is my opinion, doesn't make it fact, but in my experience and the many, many people that I've spoken with, until you get somebody to believe you, you know, it's hard. I mean, sometimes we have to give our own self-validation. We know what happened to us. We know it was wrong. Hopefully, you know, a lot of times, sometimes people don't know what's wrong. You know, they grew up in it or they thought they deserved it. You know, our perpetrators tell us we deserved it and that we asked for it. But the reality, it's never the child's fault. But if we come to understand that it was not our fault, then, you know, it's you know, we need that validation. Somebody tell us, that shouldn't have happened to you. You didn't deserve that. I'm sorry you went through that. To me, I think that is very, very important. You know, what can I do to help? You know, those are things that because, you know, the first person I told, it didn't go over well. It was an in-law, and she treated me like I was a leper from there on out. You know, looking back now with the experience I have, and knowing the family, finding out stuff about that family, they may have had their own little shame. You know, they may not have, you know, maybe they went through something, or a family member, they had their own skeletons. But she treated, and she was rich and about, you know, went to church. So, you know, I didn't tell anybody for a long time. And it wasn't until, you know, I got with another friend and we talked about each other's and we gave each other validation. You know, that's a big step. If there is anyone who is listening who hasn't called in, the number is 646-595-2118. Feel free to call in. But if you want to just listen, please understand it's not your fault. No one has the right to touch a child, whether they beat them, whether they put them down, they tell them they're worthless and no good, or they sexually molest them. And what I have seen, there's two kinds of sexually molesting. The kind where you're the special. We have this relationship because you're special. You're so special, we're allowed to have this. You're my little princess. You're my little prince, whatever the case may be. And then we've got the other, and they're both equally bad, and they're both equally damaging. The other is, you know, they beat you, they take you, they rape you, you know, they put you down, you know, and both are bad. And I've seen evidence of both. And, you know, a lot of times you're the special that, you know, that creates people to fall into narcissism, you know, because they were told at a young age that they were special and they were this and they were that, you know, just so somebody could, you know, use them for their own pleasure. It's horrible. It's sickening. But it happens. I think validation helps us a lot. And then finding the right support group. You know, this call-in show is a support group. You know, there are some local support groups. You know, I've had people come on this show and say, the only way you can heal is through a therapist. That's not true. Therapists are fabulous. And if you find the right trauma-trained therapist, I've had people come on this show to tell horrific stories about, you know, the therapist. You were this age, you should have known better. Why didn't you tell somebody, you know? Or, you know, those kind of things, putting the blame on their patient. If you find a good therapist, great. If you don't, change them, find another one. There, you know, some people, you know, were abused in the church. Some people found healing in the church. So there's a lot of things we can do to get a support system. Revenge. That's okay because, you know, if we have revenge or if we get justice, you know, those things, you know, might be what we need. We may not ever get our justice. We may never get our revenge. My grandmother died and never even acknowledged what she did to me, the damage she did to me. And she's dead, so I will never get that justice. Sometimes we will never bring that perpetrator who sexually molested us to court. But we can get healing. You know, we can get healing. We can write a book. We can write a fictional book like Annie did, right?
I'm here.
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay.
I didn't know you were taking a break. I was ready to continue listening.
I didn't want to step on anybody.
Oh, no. Okay, yeah, this go ahead. Is this
there is
Kathy,
a difference.
Ahead, Kathy, the mic is yours.
There is a difference, though, between justice and revenge, and I think that justice is more aligned with validation, and I so appreciate the way you articulated it because it does matter, and the support group matters because those of us who have experienced it are giving true validation. I mean, we understand the pain. We understand the things you go through. And the family rejection, which is so common for those of us who are incest survivors. And, you know, it's just really well. But I just, I remember one of the guests on NASCA a while back, he did time for it too, but actually killed his rapist. And I was able to, before mother passed, and I'm happy I did confront all of them, you know, even if they rejected me forever. It was liberating. I don't think the guy's going to go to jail, but, you know, and it isn't that justice that I'd be receiving, but because it doesn't even bring me pleasure to think of him in jail. I mean, he's, what, 74 or something like that now? And so, you know, I wouldn't even want to spend the rest of the next few years going through the hassle. But the exposure, I think, and the shame placed elsewhere is good for me. I think that would be justice. So writing, as mm-hmm. you did, either whatever it is, even if he's passed, those that knew him may have a different view on how you exposed in your view. In the story, which
yeah.
is great. Many people have written books, and I have bought a few from many of those that have wrote here on NASCA, and because I think it's quite a feat to write it all down. Heck, I couldn't even, if I were to be a guest to tell my story, I'd have to spend so much time writing things down in some kind of order. But there's many things that I'm grateful for, and I think that matters. So much more that I'm grateful for than I'm seeking revenge or anything poor. And yes, self-validation does matter. I never for a moment blamed myself. I reacted in, coping mechanisms, as I said earlier, but still, I didn't think that I was at fault, you know, ever. And I was groomed as a child. So, you know, that happens also where you don't really know that it's, you know, somebody's digitally penetrating you and reading pornography to you when you're in the third grade that this is really wrong. You know, you don't really put it all together then, not till later.
Yeah.
I guess it was second to, you know. Anyway, when I was young, second to fourth grade for quite a while in there, was that kind of grooming and secret games and stuff, you know, and they were all wrong, and they were all for his sexual gratification, which I didn't know. You know, I didn't understand that at that time. I didn't understand sexual, as many of us don't. We don't understand what really is happening and why it is, or even that it's wrong, you know? So... But when you get old and you get the hindsight glasses on, you know, and therapy, which I had about, I guess, 20 years after, and then again recently when I went for the big family confrontation, I knew it was going to be rough, so it was helpful. And so were all the NASCA family members. I must once again appreciate that, truly. So
okay.
That's all
thank
I got to say
sharing.
About that for now.
All right. Okay. Well, that's a lot. Annie, what do you think? We'll give you a chance to respond.
Okay. Well, I think that having validation, as you've both said, is very, very important. I was lucky enough that when I first started working on the incest in my past, I was immediately sent to a group. It was a 12-step group for people who were incested as children. And I was just amazed. There's a group for this? Wow. And finding other people who experienced it, that was so eye-opening to me. And that's what really started my healing, was knowing I wasn't the only one. And I want to say that I was almost 50 when I started to think about it. I had spoken about it briefly when I was like 45 to someone who told me that he was a victim. And that was my first, oh my God, someone else. But it still took me until I had to retire. I was ill. And then I went to a therapist, and the therapist sent me to the group, and the group was the healing place. And oh, one other thing I wrote down, and that was anonymity. The group that I was in was a 12-step group, so anonymity was really important to it. I can't even tell you the name of that group because that's part of the rules. And I think that's awesome for people who aren't ready yet. But I have to say that the most healing step I ever took was put a book out there with my name on it that says I was a victim of incest.
Uh-huh.
Because that is who I am, that's who I was, me, and it gave me so much power
right.
to do that.
Absolutely.
I recommend it to everyone.
Absolutely. Kathy, do you want to respond?
Well, I'll just say that I think we all, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello? Okay, I wasn't sure if I had it on mute. I just want to say we all have so much power, and when we let go of that burden we're carrying, as you did, while yes, I certainly feel it gives you power, but I really think it kind of loosens up our chains, if you will. It breaks those chains that are keeping us from really being the full person that we can be, you know, and it's great.
Mm-hmm.
It is great. It was very, I was pushed, I think, to come out because my niece was going to move into his marital home, and I was a little worried. She was about the same age, and that was the first time I came out. But I,
mm-hmm.
you know, kind of pushed it off a little bit. I didn't minimize it. You know, I just wanted to let a little, I just keep your eye out, folks. You know, things weren't so cool. But, of course, in hindsight, I realized that they all knew. There's no way a parent would see, you know, as many times as they did and not put, you know, two and two together. But, you know, it's an intentional denial, and it's a wishing that it wasn't true, so you don't look and you don't say and you close it. But my brother almost got caught, if you don't mind me pulling into a little personal
no,
part
okay.
of the story. Okay. He almost got caught. I came down from his room, and my clothes were turned, or my leotard and tights were not right. The tights were supposed to be under the leotards, you know, and they weren't. And mother was real picky about how we, you know, put them on. And so she noticed it. And there's no way that I could have done it anywhere else but upstairs. Yet, and he was panicked because she brought it up. And I covered for him. And that was the end of it at that time. At that point of the situation, and for that time, and I covered for him, and I was thinking, okay, bro, you know, don't worry about it. I got you covered here. We got our secret games are just fine, you know. But of course, at that point, I thought for many years that he stopped because he almost got caught. But I realized, in understanding the whole dynamic of the abuse, is that he no longer had control over me. He had to depend on my being part of it, instead of his being in full control of the whole situation. So it stopped for, almost 10 years, I think. And and that's when he came on me. And I had another thing, which would be, if I ever told my story, was delayed puberty. And I realize now my body was reacting for all of those reasons. And my mind, you know, works over your body and all of that. But at 17, because I was almost 16 before I started menstruating, and that's late.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering what's going on here. But anyway, when I was 17, he actually came into my bedroom and threw himself on me. By that time, I was not waiting for a game. And I fought. And he pushed and he held me down. He's bigger and stronger. And I just wanted to say, I put a thing on Facebook when they first started it up to explain yourself on this for a whole lot of other reasons why I put this little thing, and I called myself an equal opportunity piss'em offer. And I never really thought much more about it, but I fought. I had my legs together, and I'm doing it now, and I got to watch it because it's a real big issue that's hit since I've been re-triggered since I came out a couple years ago.
Sure.
As he began to get closer and perhaps penetrate, you know, penally, if you will, I used to call it, well, he was either greased up for the occasion, he ejaculated, or I urinated. But I'm realizing now, because I couldn't think, because it's hot, and I was thinking now, well, damned if I didn't piss him off, because he got soft, and I pushed him off, and I was able to get away. What happened after that, I got beaten unconscious, but that's the rest of that story. But I just think it's interesting how your body does protect yourself in many ways, and there are other many ways through much of my travels, and I'm sure you all have had experiences as well where, you know, things happen and your body does do things that that help you out. And in that instance, I really think because we're women and it's not usual that you can squirt. I mean, maybe those guys can, but it's not usual. And that's, you know, I was thinking, oh, no, that couldn't happen because, you know, the whole bed would have been wet, you know, if I started peeing. But I did. But that is what can happen. And I heard that.
Okay.
And I now found out that could happen. And I hope that wasn't too much information.
No, it's this is an adult show.
Okay.
One of the things, and we got another caller, but before I go to the caller, yeah, you know, one of the things that was going through my mind as you and Annie shared, if for anyone who is listening, you know, one of the things is that creates so much guilt, and sometimes our abusers use it against us. You liked it, you wanted it. The act of sex feels good. I mean, unless they're beating you, like you said, you're forcing themselves on you or beating you. You know, a lot of times if somebody, if they rub you and they caress you and fondle you or whatever the case may be, we're humans. It feels good. Even if you're a kid, that doesn't mean that it's the child's fault. It is still 100% because they start these psychological mind games on us. You know, but, you know, if somebody rubs your vagina, it's going to feel good. That's just life. You know, that's just being human. And that's where a lot of the guilt comes from, and, you know, and maybe, you know, some participation, you know, between the mind games. But it's still, the cat just opened the door, it still is never, ever, ever the child's fault, ever. You know, and I think a lot of times we have to get past that guilt. Well, it must have been my fault because I like, you know, it felt good. It must have been my fault because I did this or that or the other or you know, covered for them. But it's not. You know, we're children. You know, we're children who are put in adult situations. So I'm going to stop talking right now, and we've got a caller from area code 617. Let me open that mic. Area code 617, thank you for joining us. Who do we have the pleasure of speaking with?
Hi, this is Nancy. I'm one of the NASCA sisters. I actually just came
in,
Nancy. So I did not get a chance. Hi. Actually, I'm just coming in literally, and I did not get a chance to hear the whole story. The only part that I heard was just you recently talking about the guilt and it feeling good and all of that. And so I'm not in a position really to comment too much, but I am going to say based on what I heard you say, sorry that I didn't hear the story, but based on
That's
what
okay.
you said, it's true. It's definitely true. You do feel guilty. Because you didn't tell, but the abusers use that as a manipulation because, again, you know, you're not telling and you're going through it and they're like, hey, well, you participated. But, no, you are a child and your participation was not an adult consent. You were a child trusting the adult. And so you know, I'm looking forward to hearing the rest of the story, tuning in a little bit more. I am on now.
Okay.
But again, I can understand what you were talking about recently as far as having that burden and that guilt as a child.
And we need to, you know, anyone who's listening and everybody on this panel, there is not one thing that anybody could do to make it a child's fault, ever. I don't care, ever. It is never the child's fault. Well, Nancy, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Atlanta, Georgia. Yes.
Atlanta, Georgia. I'm from Augusta, Georgia.
Yes.
So,
hey.
Yeah, so we, hey. Okay, well, we have, I'm Tammy Schaffstall. I'm calling in from Pompano Beach, Florida. We have Kathy on the show with us. She's calling in from Maine. We have Annie on the show with us. She's calling in from California. And then we have Nancy calling in from Georgia. So thank you all for joining us. For whatever reason, our special guest couldn't make it, and that's okay because we have a show. We do know that there are a lot of people listening. Like I said earlier, I looked at the stats. We could have 1,000 people listening. We could have 80 people listening. We could have 300 people listening. We may have 11. We don't know. So it does matter. Like I said earlier, I looked at the map of where people were calling in from, people calling in from all over the world, you know, from the UK. We had one from you had a couple from Germany. We had some from, there was a couple, I think, Brazil. So we do reach an international audience, and people do call in to get help. So if anyone's listening and you'd like to join us, the number is 646-595-2118. So I don't know where we left off. Annie, if you'd like to comment, I don't want to leave you out, Kathy, and then we'll get Nancy in the conversation. So the mics are all open. So does anyone have something they'd like to share?
This is Annie, and I wanted to make a comment. The body protecting itself. I thought that was so interesting about delayed puberty. That makes so much sense. And the way that my body protected itself is I had a breakdown. I had a mental breakdown in the fifth grade, out of touch with reality, and compulsive hand washing and all kinds of bad things. When I came out of that, I had no memory of sexual abuse. I had no memory of it. And it didn't come back to me until I was in my 40s. And someone said something to me about incest, and I knew. I just knew immediately. So that's,
well,
that's
common.
It is common, isn't it?
Yeah. It is. I've heard it
and
repeatedly.
I don't think I could have functioned if I'd remembered it. And
yeah,
I think that's why my brain protected me.
You know, one thing I'd like to talk about triggers, and I want to give Kathy an opportunity to talk and Nancy as well, but I think this is important to understand my perception of triggers. Terrible, and they're painful, and they can have us in a fetal position for hours, days, weeks, whatever. It's painful. But our mind and our body protects us in different ways, like you and Kathy have already shared, you know, and then when the triggers start coming, we start remembering it. And that's actually, in my opinion, part of the healing process because your body is telling you it's time to deal with it. You're capable. You know, we block it out. We don't want, like Annie said, she wouldn't have been able to function. And your body knew that, and it protected you. And when the triggers start coming back, I'm a woman of faith. You know, is it God? You know, working with our body to tell us, okay, it's time to deal with this. It's time to heal. Because a lot of times we block it out and we self-medicate in other ways, with medication, with being promiscuous, with cold, hard drugs, you know, overeating or whatever the case may be. I've heard that quite a bit. So, Kathy, let's go to you. I hadn't heard from you lately. What do you think about all that?
Well, I agree. There are so many ways we delay actually facing the gravity of the pain through various ways, as you just mentioned. And I happen to have had tenets through the years, and it has been really amazing. One girl, her mother finally gave me short notice, which was okay. I understood the reasons and it was okay. But she was getting put into it, and she finally came out that she had been bulimic. And, of course, my immediate comes to thinking what caused you to have such a, you know,
eating disorder,
traumatic things happening to you. And then as we all talk about, as you mentioned earlier, Tammy, how many, the stats are, how many people are walking around with all kinds of unfortunate, I shouldn't say unfortunate, that's mildly putting it, but traumatic events that aren't, you know, we, okay, let's just be honest. No one has a perfect thing. We don't come out and have, you know, better roses, nor should we expect it. But there are certainly crazy people that impact children at a young time, and it does cause problems. And, you know, it just makes me think about it, you know. And then recently also, I want to bring something up. It's not too off the subject, but I think it's quite noteworthy. Recently, I think Ghislaine Maxwell, one of the jurors, you know who she is, she's the Epstein guy, you know, cohort. And she, one of the jurors was supposedly, they're bringing some issue of perhaps it wasn't fair because this juror was a sexual abuse survivor, I think, or something. And I think they never asked me that question. But doggone it, if I wasn't on a jury back in the 90s, I was born in 52. I'm in my 70th year now. So I was in my 30s. I'd already started to get what I call my sexual compass askew, which is probably in my mid-30s. Shortly before I married my husband, but I was married and it was great. And I got called to the jury, and the criminal was a sexual abuse. He was a permit guy. What do you call it? He was registered sexual abuser, and the charges from the state that he'd failed to re-register his address. Now I found him not guilty. If they had found me, and he wasn't guilty, if they had found and questioned me about that, I can't imagine them having on my thing. But, you know, he was just unfortunately, for God knows what reason, and he was young, and so I figured if he had something really horrible, and which isn't a good way to look at it, but he wouldn't have been out at 25 or whatever he was. He was young. And he was just drugging. He was just hanging out for a few days over at some drugging trailer, and he was being hassled, and I understood that. He was extremely disrespectful to the state, and I did really turn the jury. So it was interesting because they're talking about this, and I'm thinking, well, golly gee, you know, that's not necessarily true, because those of us who have had the insight are maybe not we're the best. You know, we're not going to hold it out. We're going to look at it because we know we've looked at our own facts and situation, and those things matter. Anyway, I was always thinking he's still registered, and I was always thinking about sending him a card. I hope he's doing well.
Well, I'm glad you could look at that objectively, but what was going through my mind with the Epstein, and I don't want to get off on a tangent on that too much, but what
That's
was
okay.
going through
I got
my
off
mind...
Next tangent.
I'm saying past my comment, you know, is, you know, I'm thinking, okay, that person, why do they have a scarlet letter on their face, on their head? I think it would be hard, for knowing the statistics, it would be hard for them to find a full jury with someone who hadn't been, and probably other ones had, and this person, he or she, was just one who admitted it, who was,
I don't mean to interrupt.
Process.
I don't mean to interrupt, but there were 12 of us, and I looked around, and I can assure you I got that vibe, definitely got that vibe from other jurors. So, yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, cool. Well, let's go to Nancy. Absolutely. Thank you for sharing that. But I think it'd be hard, you know, damn hard if everybody was completely honest to find, a peers of 12 who hasn't, you know, none of them have been, you know, had something happen. That's just crazy.
But as you,
what do you think?
But as you said, it takes a lot of years. It takes a lot of years to come out, you know. So they were quiet.
Exactly.
But I still knew it. I knew it. Anyway, thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Thank you, Nancy. What do you think? I want to hear your comments, and then we'll go to Annie.
Nancy, what do you think?
Yes, hi. Good evening, you all. All right. So, well, right now I have a lot of different emotions I'm dealing with, right? And one of them would be that one of the things that I always find in similarity with children who have been through this level of attack and this level of abuse is they're gifted.
Mm-hmm.
They have a calling and it's deep. So, you know, I just right now at this point, personally, I pray that God gives us the strength to be able to carry our calling because they're so big. I mean, what everybody's doing, what everybody has carried in this room, it's like, whoa, I'm in the room with giants. You know what I'm saying? And and again, I just want to say God bless you all and that I pray that you guys continue to have the strength to continue to carry that type of weight that y'all, that we are all carrying together. And that was all.
Cool. Well, thank you for sharing that, Nancy.
You're welcome.
That's amazing. Let's go to Annie. I don't think she's had a chance to respond. We've heard a lot and we've discussed a lot. What's on your mind, Annie?
Well, I'm thinking about the jury and how many victims of childhood sexual abuse there probably were on that jury and probably are on a lot of juries. And I just feel like if we could get everybody to raise their hand and say, yeah, it happened to me, the whole country would be raising their hand and something would happen. You know, if we all did it.
Right.
And
where do we get the courage from?
How can we do that?
Well, you know, we just the stats that we know of, and it's hard to get stats because, you know, the CDC, you know, they've homogenized them so much. You know, now it's what's the word? There's like they wrapped it all in one word instead of, you know, physical abuse, mental abuse. I can't even think of the word now. I'm a little bit tired. But, you know, the stats that we know of was, you know, 1 in 3 girls. And, you know, I think I think it's even lower, 1 in 5 boys. I think the last time I heard it was like 1 in 4. So it depends on us. I heard that on Pandora. So, you know, it's 1 in 3 girls, you know, 1 in 4 or 5 boys that we know of. And we know the boys don't admit to it quite as much as the girls, you know. So that's the, you know, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, stand to the side. You know, we don't have to have a scarlet letter on our forehead. You know, we're people too, you know, and that, the stats that I just said is just sexual abuse. You know, I endured physical abuse. You know, I had somebody beat me and, you know, emotional abuse, and that the scars I have are deep, deep for what, you know, the beating was bad. I healed, you know, nothing was broken. It, you know, people had been beat worse. But like I said, when I started, we don't measure each other's abuse. But, you know, the emotional things that I was put through, you know, by two different people, you know, and the dysfunction I grew up in, you know, the scars are deep. It's everything. And I still struggle with it. I'm a lot much better. But my self-esteem was non-existing for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just imagine – you know, somebody telling a 4-year-old child after being beaten, you're looking at their mother and say, in front of me, you know, this world would be better off if that child never been born. She is nothing but a burden to everybody. You know, a 4-year-old hearing that, and that was common. You know, to be 10 years old, 11, 12 years old, you know, and your nickname being Dummy, you know, my God, you know, how could I have had any self-esteem? You know, no wonder I got into drugs. No wonder I had... chose bad relationships. And, you know, when a good man, and I'm single now, I'm 57 and single, you know, I wish that I've, you know, understood what a good man was, probably shoved them all to the side and went to the first piece of shit that treated me, you know, badly is who I went after, you know, because it's not, and that's, and the thing is it's normal. You know, I grew up in dysfunction, you know, and so if somebody had treated me decently, it would have been foreign. And I've heard that over. That's something that you think only happens to you, that you hear over and over and over. I chose bad relationships you know, if I was had the shit beat out of me, how in the world did I end up marrying somebody who beat me? Well, because I chose him, you know. Now I wouldn't put up with it. You know, the chances of me getting with someone who beats me are slim to none, because the first time they treated me like crap, I'd be out of there. I would never think, you know, well, I need, he loves me. I'm never going to find anybody who loves me. I know how to make it on my own. So that's my thought. Anybody? Mic's open. Well, Kathy, are you still with us?
Well,
can you guys hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Can I just say something?
Oh, absolutely.
Go
for it, Nancy.
Yeah, when you've been through that type of level of trauma, your ability to choose a good mate a lot of times is kind of, you know, obscured. It's affected.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And
yep,
so you entered an abusive situation because that's a form that's still comfortable. Even though it's crazy or whatever, it still has a level of comfort too. Because
mm-hmm.
we're used to, you know, a level of discomfort. Not that, you know, that that's who we are, because that's not who we are or who we were created to be. But in the process
mm-hmm.
of our healing journey, that's an area that a lot of us have had to cross.
Well, yeah. You know, we have a lot of people, you know, a lot of our survivors that have, we call them normies. You know, our founder has his wife is a normie. And, you know, and people who are married and have wonderful marriages to normies are, that's amazing. And, you know, good for you, because a lot of times, you know, the thought that's going through my mind, you know, has gone through my mind was, well, this person, either they're judgmental or, you know, they played against you, or, you know, it just feels uncomfortable where this guy over here, he, you know, he or she, it could be, I'm speaking for myself, but you know, could relate to he or she, you know, they get me, they understand. Yes, they do this, but, you know, we have a common thread. We have something in common. We can help each other. When in reality, you know, it's probably, you know, just probably the worst thing you could possibly do. Some people do heal together. I've seen that. It can happen. But, you know, you can also be, you know, have a partner who's a normie that is very, very sympathetic. Now, I did have one friend. I haven't heard from him lately. When I was in Key West, I was working task force in Key West. And he was married. And, you know, I talk about it. You know, I've got the radio show, the NASCA. Well, what is NASCA? And then you get into a conversation. And the next thing you know, well, my wife she endured abuse. She had blah, 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 blah. But, you know, we've got a good marriage. And it was a year later, he started reaching out to me. And, you know, it was unbelievable, you know, because how can she be in the car with her father knowing and act like at Christmas time that nothing is going on, you know? And I had to tell him, you know, well, you know, she has dealt with this her whole life. You know, it's a bizarre thing to us to have a family member abuse us, and then, you know, their abuser, whether it's you're my special pet, or they beat you and rape you, or, you know, pillage you. And then suddenly they're the parent again. You know, you're sitting, you know, you're Ozzy, you know, you're in the Ozzy and Harriet family. And we pretend. I mean, that sounds crazy to a normal, a normie, or someone that, you know, did not endure abuse. But I would venture mm-hmm. to say I feel confident in saying that anyone who endured abuse, that kind of abuse, understands that. You know, and once mm-hmm. I explained it to him, he's like, oh, my God, I never thought of it that way. So what are y'all's thoughts? Any? Any, would you work with people? I'm not sure. Go ahead. I don't know who was about to speak, but please go ahead.
Oh, this was Nancy. No, I was just going to say that I think that people who have endured that level of abuse, they feel a sense of empathy at a very high level. because they're just in shock at the level of disrespect and abuse that they're dealing with and seeing firsthand. So when people are like, oh, my God, they're like in shock, we're like, we saw it firsthand. So what do you think we're dealing with? We're like, what the hell am I looking at?
Right. And, you know, one of the things we talk about is, you know, how to react, you know, as an advocate.
Right.
I've learned to react, how to react, you know, because people,
how
you know,
do
if
you
they
react?
Don't deal with
share,
it.
Please.
Yeah. And saying, oh, my God, you need, why didn't you, that's the worst, that's the worst possible reaction that one can have, you know, to can receive from somebody they've shared this, their innermost secrets and their pain with. And but that is, you know, if you don't know anything, now I know to say, oh, you know, to be empathetic and to be calm and what can I do to help and, you know, just be a listening ear. But, you know, we don't come with that a lot of times, you know, that we're faced with, you know, dealing with outrage of a normie that we're sharing this with.
Right.
Annie, I wanted to ask you, because I know that you said, if I'm not mistaken, that you work with women. And others on this call may, but Annie, have you heard any, does that relate to any of that you've heard from people you work with?
Yes. What I do for people, mostly in the past I used to work with, I helped run a phone line where people who are victims of childhood incest could call in and tell their stories. So that I did that for quite a few years. And since then, I don't do that one anymore. But mostly now I speak about the issue at local places. I speak about incest so that people will talk about it. That's mostly what I do.
Okay, well, thank you for that, whether you're still active in that or not. And, you know, with the caller, that's amazing. That's what we have. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we have that type of show, and it's important. I told my story twice, and I know Kathy must be touring with telling a story because she mentioned it twice earlier. So I encourage you, if when you're ready, to get that, you know, to do it. It's liberating. Does that, Nancy, you know, any thoughts on, you know, having to pretend to be a normal family? Is that something that you guys have, you know, dealt with as well? You know, Nancy or Kathy or, you know, Annie just shared with us.
I had a beautiful family, if that makes a difference, you know, for the conversation. I was rather out and about. And as I said, it wasn't until my mid-30s. I did have a marriage earlier that failed, and I'll put it on both of us. But anyway, but then I was pleased and blessed to have a beautiful marriage later in my 30s, and I married for 32 years, you know. So that was great.
Right.
And, yeah, we had a beautiful child, and, you know, I tell you what, I don't know if anybody's ever done this, and I wasn't planning on it, but, you know, I sat with him until his last moment, and one of my friends said, you know, I vowed to live the rest of my life with you, but you live the rest of your life with me. So my husband, as I said, again, passed away last, but it was beautiful. And, yes, it was better than anyone could have ever envisioned, in my view, and I'm not saying that in hindsight. I felt it all the way through, and it was nice, and it was tough for me to cry. I must say, I don't know if any of you have had that issue, but it was tough, and I don't know. I think I grieved the loss of my mother earlier, before she died, because all kinds of family issues and my confrontation and everything, I was blocked. But anyway, when my husband, because I felt so blessed to have had the time with him, that how dare I? What, do I deserve more? Most people don't even get half of what I got. And so I feel so overwhelmed and pleased. And I'm not going to say that I didn't go through quite a journey to get there. But, you know, I'm pleased.
Well, we all have our story, and we all have like I said at the beginning of the show, I'm not quite sure who was on there. You know, we have common threads. You know, my sister, you know, my stepdad who did, I mean, he did do what he did, and he just died last Thanksgiving. Me being, nine years old and him putting his penis in my hand and holding me down, but it was just that one time. You know, he tried it again when I was 14 and I couldn't be groomed at that point. And then found out later on that, you know, he moved on to another family member. But, you know, it was traumatic. And I can relate to some. I can't relate to others, but I know what it's like to be abused. I know, you know, some of the common threads. You know, I know what it's like. You know, probably people listening to this show can know what it's like to be, you know, emotionally abused or physically abused, you know, or, you know, I've heard some horrific stories, you know, that just are unimaginable. But these people endured it, you know, to have to be locked in, you know, locked in a basement or withheld food, you know, or made to eat your own vomit. I mean, I've heard it all. And it's tough sometimes, but, you know, we have to be there for each other. Even though some of our stories are different, there's always going to be common threads. I'll never forget Bill would make the comment, he may or may not be listening, eventually you'll hear your own story. And I've had people who have come on, they were pretty darn close, you know, it's pretty darn close, you know, but there's always going to be common threads because we know what it feels like. You know, the shame and the feelings. So that's just my thoughts. Anybody got any thoughts? Well, all mics are open. So anybody, either about what we had talked about or if something's weighing on somebody's mind, we've got about 20 minutes left, 25 minutes left of the show. So if anybody wants to share anything on what we've discussed, you know, from the beginning to the end, you know, please feel free to do so.
I have something. This is Annie.
Go ahead, Annie.
I'd like to discuss what we can do to get people to talk about this out loud all the time so that it's common knowledge and not a big secret that everybody hides. I think that's what we need to do, but how do we do it? I know this radio show is doing it. That's a great way to do it. But how else can we do it?
I have a suggestion.
Go ahead, Nancy.
I think that many of us, and I know Tammy has heard, and I'm very supportive of it, was Victoria Kelly's clothesline. Can you hear me? Hello?
Yeah. I thought it was Nancy, but it's Kathy, right?
Yes, I'm sorry. This is Kathy over in Maine. Victoria Kelly came up with a clothesline project, and I recall, and she put it up, and it was a lot of work, and it was in a more outside of the town in Minneapolis that didn't get a lot of the exposure that I know could be possible. So I'm hoping to get it 6 miles long. Now, that's easily to do with the numbers we spoke of on a jury, let alone how many, 14 years, Tammy, that Bill's had this show. And each person would just send or have done for them to be designated on the clothesline, similar to the AIDS quilt, for those of you old enough to remember it. Now, AIDS was a big deal, and no one who lived through that scare and the children who died won't remember the displays of the AIDS quilt. I can see that clothesline 6 miles long. Okay?
Okay. Well, that's some thoughts.
I think that would be blowing in the wind, you know, silence, survivors, speak out, the answer, my friend, and it'd be hard to ignore. Now, if any of you haven't seen it, each article of clothing was depicted with a small, the age you were, I said, no, don't touch me, all kinds of whatever it was that would simply show the, rather than you can't hang, you know, the people. But
right.
It was okay. Really impactful to me, and I do believe that it would be, but it would take some organization and some commitment and a lot of logistics. But I do believe,
right.
And I think 6 miles is easy to do. She had about 40 pieces up, maybe. I can't remember how long it was. And she had some good speakers and everything, but certainly it was a lot of work.
Right.
But certainly it can be magnified 1,000 times. So
mm-hmm.
anyway,
yeah.
I thought it was a great initiative. And I want to give Victoria Keller kudos for bringing it to light.
Yeah, I do remember Victoria talking about that. And Annie, you're right. You know, we need to get the word out. And I think a lot of it is, quite frankly, is getting the people in normal situations discussing it. We've come a long way. When we had talked about some of the things earlier, back in the day, we didn't talk about it. We protected the family. I mean, I remember, you don't put your family laundry out there. You don't share that. You know, you protect the family. And I'll never forget, one therapist came on. This has been a number of years. I remember because I was traveling in Shreveport. And she worked with children. You know, we bring awareness to child abuse, but we don't work directly with children. But she did. She was a child therapist. And she said repeatedly, what the children want is they don't want their parent to go to jail or their uncle or brother or whoever to go to jail. They want the abuse to stop, you know? And, you know, they don't, you know, and then, you know, the things that were told, you know, if you tell, yeah, I was told, my stepdad said, if you told, you have to go back and live with your grandma. Well, she beat me. Of course I didn't tell. So we've got to be able to, you know, there's a lot of things we can do, and we've come a long way. And it's not a sexy subject for everybody to talk about. Bring it up in a cocktail party and see how quickly people, you know, scurry away from you. But, you know, just being a member of NASCA, like I said, when I was in Key West, you know, I don't have the shame anymore. I'll talk about the Key West in a minute, but I was on the phone with a person who actually reports to me. And, you know, and I went through something personally traumatic with my stepdad dying Thanksgiving Day. It put me, you know, it put me in a whirlwind, my whole family in a whirlwind. But, you know, I had actually stepped away from NASCA for a short time, and I told her I was getting back into it, and she was like, well, the shame of it. And I told her, I said, I'm not ashamed. I talk about it. You know, I think we were talking about something at work, you know, because, you know, I do the radio show from my office a lot. But, you know, I'm not going to hide it anymore. You know, well, I had the radio show NASCA, just like when I was in Key West. What is NASCA? It's the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. We got to be really careful, especially when we're on fire, you know, talking about it, that we don't, you know, run people off with the verbal diarrhea. But there are subtle ways we can bring it up. You know, Annie's got it perfect, you know. Well, you know, you can just, you know, bring it up. You know, I work with women. I do this. And then I have found people will ask questions. A lot of times they'll scoot away from you because, you know, they don't want to deal with it or they are not ready to deal with what they're dealing with. I've had people scoot away from me and then later on come back and they tell me a little bit. Then they tell me a little bit more. And they tell me a little bit more, you know, and depending on, you know, if I've got alcohol intake, I'll have to shut them off because I don't like to talk about it. I had this one guy when I go up to a local pub, you know, he'll talk about it, and I'll say, and I'll listen to him. I want to listen to him because he's ready to talk about it. And then I've already had a couple of cocktails. I was like, okay, well, you know, I'll call you tomorrow. And I did. I called him. But there are ways that we can bring it up, you know, and get it in the normal verbiage that we don't have. That's just my thought. Nancy, what do you think? What do you think about Annie's question? How can we get,
yes.
How can we, you know, get it out there?
I think what we're doing right now is so powerful, you know, sharing our testimonies and speaking up and being on the mic and getting to many, many, many people, leaving the information, setting a path for those that are looking to walk in the healing. I think that I'm just hoping that more people rise up and find the courage to take the first step and open up. And, you know, what I love about our organization is that it's not like you have to go straight into speaking on the mic. You can just speak to someone and share and get it out and know it's a safe place. So the fact that we also have this platform, this is like another step to grow. And again, you know, getting trauma-informed educators and counselors and coaches is definitely important. And when we're talking about childhood, those are specialized in the area of childhood, getting the right information, the right support. And I think that we're doing a great job with, you know, with our initiatives right now. But I hope that we get the information out to more people so we can have a stronger impact in the community and just everywhere in the world, because this is a global pandemic.
Yep. Well, you know, another thing, and Kathy, I brought it up earlier, you know, without going into the Epstein case, you know, we all have our thoughts about that, and I doubt that there's a survivor of child abuse that's not outraged from that. You know, whatever happened to him, I don't want to get into the details of that. But, you know, like Kathy said, you know, we've got to hold we have to hold Hollywood, and we have to hold these people accountable, you know, for this. And, you know, bringing that, you know, I've got my opinion on Michael Jackson, whether he was guilty or innocent, you know, that's not, you know, we've had shows on that, but, you know, exposing it. You know, people coming forward. You know, we have, you know, the Corey Feldman that, you know, where the other Corey who died, you know, Charlie Sheen raped him on the set of a movie. I won't even watch that movie anymore. You know, coming forward. You know, Corey Feldman coming forward and holding Hollywood accountable. You know, and holding these people accountable. You know, and we turn a blind eye. We've got Aerosmith. You know, Aerosmith is a rock and roll band. You know, he adopted a child so he could date her. Well, how in the hell did that happen? You know, rock and roll band. You know, Elvis. You know, I'm not saying Elvis was a perpetrator, but, you know, society took a blind eye to him dating Priscilla when she was, what, 14? How did that happen? How did that become acceptable? You know, these people, they don't get a pass. The prince, you know, and they took his role to Prince Andrew. You know, how did we give him a pass for so long? No, and I think if we hold these people accountable and don't give them a pass, I think that can make a difference. And it gets us talking about it. What do y'all think?
I got something to say. Does you mind? This is Kathy.
Go ahead, Kathy.
Okay,
yes, go ahead.
I just want to make sure I'm not muted. Anyway, I had mentioned, because I heard another guest some while back and noted it in whatever it was, and it's true, and I think it'll hold true for all of us. The largest demographic of abuse victims are family members, while I agree with you 150% on all these jerks and those that cover them up because of money. Let's be realistic. Why did that happen? Because of money. We all know bottom line is they don't really care about the human beings. They care about their own asses. And that's why that happened. But and it's a shame. It's horrible. It's horrible that happened. It's horrible that what happened to each of us. Yet we are, I believe, widely ignored because our abusers were just Uncle Jack, you know, ain't no big deal. It was a big deal, okay? It was just as big of a deal as it was for anybody else that had their whatever else happened to them. And I do want to admit, I do want to interject without getting into anything. My three siblings, including the rapist, went through horrible things. And I will be blessed that because I was raped horrifically at 17, I did seek therapy. It took me 20 years, but I did. And they never did. And it was really horrible what they went through. And it affected their entire lives. But in any event, I really believe that a 6-mile-long flag is not going to be able to be ignored.
Good for you. Yeah.
I don't think it will be. I would like to see some of us get together and really see it happen and make it, put it in D.C. right down there in the mall, you know, like the flags. But, you know, I think it's possible. You know, I really
right.
do.
Well, you know,
anyway,
you
that's how I feel.
It.
But
whether
I love you all. I love you all, and this has been so great. And I'm gonna mute myself and listen to all you beautiful ladies speak, and call me
okay,
if you need
well,
me. But I'll be listening.
okay, okay. Well, you're welcome to join in. Anybody's welcome to join
no,
in.
No, I'm
all
not going.
Children.
I'm just gonna mute myself, and I just want to
okay.
tell you how I hope you all really think about that because it's so important. We are the largest demographic, and
well,
you know,
you're right. If you think of the statistics. 90% of the children know their perpetrator. Out of that 90%, 67% are family members. The other 33% is a coach or a neighbor or a caregiver. Only 10% is stranger danger. That means, and then almost 70% of them are somebody that the child knows. That's huge. You know, whether we put in, and they're all good ideas, you know, to put the quilt out there, the 6 mile that will, and the point is to get exposure. But how do we get these reporters talking about it? You know, exposing the rich and famous is a good segue for some reporter to throw our statistics out there. You know, I mean, it's another thing. You know, why is it so hard to get stats? I mean, the stats that we go by now are outdated. We know that. People are coming forward more. We have people standing up. People are, you know, those are statistics from a couple of years ago that is all that's available to us because it's not focused in on. How do we get that reporter to notice, you know, to report on this, you know, this horrific, the stats that we're just talking about, and to get it out to the masses? You know, they would rather report on, you know, something else, you know, Justin Bieber or something silly like that, or, you know, somebody did something crazy. How do we get reporters talking about it? You know, as a good segue would have been, we've got this Epstein, we've got this person, his sidekick on trial. Why hasn't somebody brought up the statistics? Why aren't these reporters talking about, you know what really happened? The Epstein is not an isolated case, as Kathy and others have talked about. It's 1 in 3. It's 1 in 3, and that's just sexual abuse alone, not including, you know, the other types of abuses that are horrific. You know, why does the kid that, you know, gets beaten and battered and killed, I mean, it makes Nancy Grace, you know, but, you know, Nancy Grace is putting it out there on Facebook. I like Nancy Grace, but I think you probably have to subscribe to that. I don't know. Let's go back to Annie. We've got about 9 minutes. So, Annie, does that help at all, or what are your thoughts on what you've heard?
I appreciate everything that I heard, and especially that clothesline project. I can't wait to do some mm-hmm. research into that. It sounds fabulous. And as I was listening, it came to my mind, remember Hands Across America, where everybody just went outside and we all held hands? We could do that. We could do Hands Across America. We've all been abused. I don't know how it would work, but something like that where everybody came out at once and said, yeah, it happened to me.
Me too. Like it did with, but Me Too was more not for child abuse, and I think that we embraced it, but the Me Too was more, yes, I've been, you know, grown women. How do we do it? Me Too.
Yes.
You know, they came up with Me Too, but that's, you know, that's not, you know, with something like the Me Too. Yes.
Me
That's
Too.
Happened
kids.
To me. Yeah. Me Too kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me Too kids. Yeah. But wouldn't that be cool if we just had the one day where everybody would just
Do
walk out
one?
On their porch and said, it happened to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but if
I'm
you
a survivor.
Can I say something? This is Kathy again. But if you wrote it on a shirt, we wouldn't have to go all into a certain place together and hold hands. While certainly each of us have heard, I have no doubt, others who have not come forward publicly and have told of their tales, and we understood. And I just think the Clothesline Project has such potential because they send you can even be anonymous, but we would know, and those that solicit, particularly NASCA, because we and I'll say sisters here of NASCA sisters, have Penelope particularly as a member for quite some time. You know who you're talking to, and you know that these aren't people making up stupid stories, you know? So they would be impactful in that regard. And somehow in my head, for reasons I could explain for other, I just think that a 6 mile long clothesline with clothes on it with notes of people cannot be ignored by the media. It cannot be, because there will be plenty of people holding hands in that 6 mile thing. And it can have to be zigzag right. in different places, but
okay.
six miles is really, yeah, it sounds like a really big goal. So attainable. Look at the numbers.
Okay.
It's one garment sent with a piece of article of clothing, or done by someone who's willing to volunteer to make the garment for them, hanging on a clothesline. And it would be, logistics would be done, and I've thought about ways to make it so you can be moved, you know. Anyway, it would have
cool.
to be, it is so doable. The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind, hang out your dirty laundry. I can think of so many acronyms, silence. We say nothing. Just blow it. Put
right.
it out there. Look at it.
What?
No, you know,
I just thought
it was so impactful. And while I appreciate so much what her initiative and what she went through, it has to be big, and it can't be ignored, and it can be big because we're big, and we do not wish to be ignored.
Absolutely.
Anyway, I love you all.
Victoria Kelly, if you've heard her story, she comes on the show sporadically, I've been actually a panel member. I think I may have even interviewed her one time when she told her story. She's got a very impactful story. So that's a very good idea that Victoria has come up with. One of the things I'd like to mention is, it's the end of January, but April is the National Child Abuse Awareness Month. So there's a lot we can do to get that. I know we put a lot of stuff. I usually put articles and ribbons on mine, but that gives us a perfect opportunity to bring it up to the normies, to put it on the forefront. Heaven knows it needs to get, we need more media exposure, but there are things we can do. And everybody, it's like an elephant, you know. It's we can't look at it like this is too big for us to deal with. Every little bit helps. You know, what Nancy does
mm-hmm.
helps. What Andy has done and doing has helped. With Kathy, putting stuff on Facebook and interacting and being on the show helps. You know, when it is, the we put stuff on our own pages, but when we have the National Child Abuse Awareness Month, we can get, that's a perfect time to get it out there. It's a perfect time to bring up the subject and talk about it and talk about what we do and what we, and throw our stats out there. And I know that I think there's some rallies that people attend and stuff. I know there's one in California that Bill participates in. I just got the 90-second mark, so I wanted to have, if anybody has something really, really, really quickly that they'd like to add or thank, now is a good time. We just have a few minutes left, a few seconds left.
I love you.
Love you too.
Good night, ladies.
All right. Good night. Well, I would like to thank Kathy and Annie and Nancy for calling in. I really appreciate that. I think this was a terrific show for the people who are listening, and we know the stats, so we know you're out there. Thank you for listening. Hopefully you got something out of the show, and you'll listen again and call in. I'm very, very grateful for NASCA, and I'm very grateful for the show tonight. I'd like to say God bless the children of the world, and God bless adult survivors of child abuse. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Radio.